back to the thrilling conclusion of the Space Show Show's episode 41. That's the conclusion of episode 41. We're now in episode 42. Welcome back, Agora, the Space Show Show. I'm your host, Lieutenant Commander Rebecca Frost, joined as always by Carrie Jackson, Admiral Carrie Jackson, Commander Robert Neal, and Bob Pickard.
Bob Pickard. I'm a farm supplier for the Pickard family.
We have a thrilling episode for you today as we conclude the cliffhanger from season 3, Best of Both Worlds, part 2. We will also talk about these other episodes, Family, Brothers, Suddenly Human, and Remember Me. Interesting episodes, kind of different, I think, than what we're used to from Star Trek. And I'm so excited to talk about it. Best of Both Worlds Part 2, having absorbed Captain Picard and his knowledge, the Borg head for Earth, leaving Riker and the Enterprise desperate for an unanticipated way to defeat them. One of my favorite ways to describe things that I really like is a real butt clencher. And Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and 2 were real butt clencher episodes. So, having absorbed Captain Picard for his knowledge, the Borg are on their way to Earth. The Enterprise is still tending to its warp drives and is unable to pursue. It will take 8 to 12 hours for the Enterprise to be repaired and to resume the pursuit of the Borg ship. I have a question here just right out the gate. The Borg are on their way to Earth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they're getting there so, so fast. We were told it would take 6 days for assistance to arrive. For the Enterprise to head on, take on the Borg ship. But it seems the Enterprise seems to follow the Borg ship pretty quickly as well. So what's the deal there?
Hand wave him.
It was 6 days for a support ship to get to where the Enterprise was fighting the Borg from where they were. Not necessarily coming from Earth, but wherever the closest one was.
Sure, but one would think there would be a support ship.
I think they were all massing at Wolf 359 and there wasn't anything available that was
true.
Less than 6 hours away.
That's true. The ship was going down at Wolf 359, so maybe everybody
was there.
A
real star constellation, by the way. A red dwarf system.
So Hansen, who we met in the previous episode, has assembled a fleet of 40 ships that intercept point Wolf 359.
Should have got 40 more.
Klingons are sending in their ships, too. Hansen promotes Riker to captain of the Enterprise as Picard is declared a casualty of war. Ooh. And I messaged you guys this, but I was having my own personal flashbacks to this is exactly how I got on Geek Show.
Yep.
It's not necessarily I wanted the promotion, but not like this, you know?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Picard is surgically altered to assimilate into the Borg collective. The procedure is extremely painful, but Picard can only manage a tear rolling down his face, indicating that somewhere in there, Picard is still alive.
He put a drill through his head.
Yeah.
I mean, gotta get the Borg stuff in there.
The fleet at Wolf 359, totally destroyed. Borg.
Well, that's what you get for... getting Excalibur class ships in there. Those ships are 80 years old.
Oh, they about Wolf 359.
They really, really went to town with the refit on the VFX on that.
Yeah,
because I remember the original viewing of that and going, well, that's some broken spaceships. But when they redid the effects, they were like, well, let's really make it look like 40 ships blew up here.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh! And they're looking at the Enterprise arrives and they see the destruction, and you're already just like, oh man, that sucks, doesn't it? And then Shelby's listing off all the ships that are there and names the Melbourne.
And Riker's
and
like,
on Riker, and I'm like, whoa, dodged a bullet there, man.
How did I know not to take that command?
I'm Riker, the luckiest boy in the universe.
I don't think so. Riker selects Shelby as first officer, despite their earlier differences. It's obvious she is the best choice for the job.
I love her. I wanted more of her.
Anyway. I think she was fantastic. Beverly suggests introducing destructive nanites on the Borg ship to decimate it, but it will take 3 weeks to make it work.
You remember that time that Wesley did that to us?
Remember my terrible son?
So here's the thing. We beam Wesley over right around nap time with some nanites in a container. And then when he falls asleep, he'll have accidentally left the nanite container open. No more Borg. Everything's fixed. All because of sleepy time Wes.
I like
Here's the thing about Star Trek. There's no bad ideas. And I love that because of Star Trek. I love Star Trek. There's no bad ideas. Are they going to do it? No. But thank you for trying, Beverly. Riker goes to sit in his new captain's office. And Guinan meets up with him. And I suddenly find myself needing to know a lot more about Guinan and Picard's relationship.
Well, I've got good news for you. You never will.
Are you serious? Are you true or is this a blueberries?
Oh, please retire the blueberries for God's sake, people.
No, we find out more about their relationship in Picard.
She's old.
Mm-hmm. She shows up in Picard?
Yeah.
Oh, God, you guys.
Oh, not only that.
She shows up in a movie, too, kind of.
And she's the inspiration for a series of dirty limericks by Mark Twain.
Yes, that's true.
yes.
No, what we know about her race is that her species is that they live a very long time.
And they can go like this and scare cue.
And they can, yes. they live a very long time, and they have some, it's, help me with the power description, it's like an empathy.
It's the power of voodoo. You say hoodoo, and I say power of the babe.
Which is why she's such a good listener, you know.
Yeah.
It's an empathic type of racial or species ability.
And it's too bad, because Peter David told us all about Guinan's people, but none of that's real.
Oh, really? It's not canon?
No, it's like Legends. So it's...
Honestly, canon is whatever you want it to be, in my opinion.
Yep. But they are called the Elarian, is the name
Elarian.
Of the species?
Elarians, yeah.
Yeah. So
interesting.
And we'll meet a few of them coming up.
Another something that I have noticed, because I'm trying to remain spoiler-free for everything Star Trek, but because I'm on Star Trek Twitter, I can't necessarily avoid.
Get off Star Trek Twitter.
I can't do it. It's where all the cool people are.
You kids, I give you the easiest solution to your problem, and you're like, I can't.
Just don't. I give you the easiest solution. Just stop it.
Yeah. You learn the hard way.
Look,
you learn the hard.
You want to get rid of your lung cancer? Stop breathing.
Stop it.
That's right.
Yeah.
But a piece of information I learned. So I learn bits and pieces that, and I'm not necessarily mad that they're spoiled for me. It's more of that would have been fun to find out in real time. That Adam Scott shows up in a Star Trek movie, I suppose.
Yes.
Anyway, it was an instance of man, that would have been cool. That would have been cool to find out. Anyway, Guinan has a real good heart-to-heart with Riker. I love her so much. I think she's quickly becoming one of my favorite characters, and I wish I had more of her. Anyway, so Guinan wants Riker to address the crew and shake them out of the death grip they all have on themselves right now. She says that most of the crew expect to be dead in their next encounter with the Borg, and they're right. This entire time, even last episode, I was like, remember, they're effed. They're so effed.
Well, yeah, because the Enterprise D is better than an Excalibur class, but is it better than 40 Excalibur classes?
No.
Because, you know, one ninja versus Bruce Lee, Bruce Lee's going to punch a ninja, but 40 ninjas versus Bruce Lee, eh.
Are they duck-sized or horse-sized ninja?
They're ninja-sized ninjas.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
She also tells Riker to let Picard go and think for himself, as that is the only way to beat the Borg, who know everything Picard knows about the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And she's right, because Riker especially, too, he's been spending a lot of time boy, I sure wish Picard was here to make these hard decisions. And she does a really good job of snapping him out of it and making him go, making him realize, hey, you are the captain now. And you need to be thinking as a captain.
Riker. That's Guinan's specialty is slapping sense into crew members and
they'll get prune juice.
And you'll get more of it coming up. I love it. There's a scene coming up in a future episode here where she smacks Deanna a bit.
Oh.
And I loved every minute of it.
Oh my goodness. The Enterprise reaches Wolf 359 and the remnants And Riker dodged a bullet, not being on the Melbourne. Riker intercepts the Borg before they reach Earth. Again, what's the time like? What a hand wavy.
It's wibbly wobbly.
And why did they go out of warp when they entered the Sol system? Because they're like on full impulse from Saturn to Earth.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to figure that one out. Is there something against being at full warp when you're
it's
in,
like,
when
you're
in system?
You're on a boat. There's like a no wake zone.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's no warp drive in the system. Systems. Because it seems to me like even in the motion picture they waited.
Yeah. No,
because in 10100001 they warped out from the starbase right after they got out of the
That's true.
Bay doors.
Mm-hmm.
That is true.
Yeah.
But they weren't supposed to.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was a special circumstance.
Maybe they're creeping.
I'm telling you, it's like a no wake zone when you're on a boat and how you have to wait to get further away from.
Well, that's how they got to Earth so fast, as they followed the wake of the Borg cube.
Yeah, they just rode the wake.
Yeah. And you know, Riker is out there on a wakeboard.
Riker decides to listen to Shelby's advice about how they should best attack the Borg, and so they separate the saucer section. Shelby heads the saucer, he heads the battle section. Riker assigns Data and Worf to infiltrate the Borg ship using the shuttlecraft. Brave boys! The Borg has modified their electromagnetic fields as such that the Enterprise could not transport Data and Worf inside their ship. As Riker and Shelby engage the Borg in battle, Worf and Data rescue Picard, who is still in Borg form, from the ship. They do a really cool thing where, they start heading towards the Borg ship. Riker says, cut your power, and just essentially drift, and they make it in undetected. And then they get our boy. As soon as they got him, on my couch, fist pumping. We got him, now get out of there! But then I remembered, Earth is like right there, though.
Little thing, forgot.
It's just a little tiny thing, you cannot leave. So the Borg resume their course to Earth. The Enterprise unites as a ship again and pursues. Picard is now on board the Enterprise. He berates Riker, also still calling him number one. You can't do that, man. You're not allowed.
His likeness has been assimilated.
He berates Riker, saying that Picard would never endanger the ship to rescue one person. I don't know about that. He also says that the humans will be assimilated, and so will the Klingons. Data will cease to exist, as he is considered a primitive android. The Borg have reached Jupiter and will reach Earth in 27 minutes, and the Enterprise is still 42 minutes away. Hey, this is episode 42. Mm. Coincidence?
I think I see a new conspiracy theory forming.
There we go.
I love Borg Picard aboard the Enterprise. He is just chilling. Like, he's not being threatening at all.
I was gonna say,
he's just walking around.
Yeah, they're just letting him hang out. And I'm like, what?
They figured out the way to pacify a Borg is to cut one of his pant legs off.
There you go.
Yeah. And pop him in half a Speedo.
And we put him behind a gate, and he can't go outside of the gate. He can't
it's like
walk.
A Roomba. You know, in a Roomba, you set up the things and the Roomba can't go past it.
You stop Borg and Christopher Pike that way with a gate.
And babies.
don't make that joke about Pike.
Ouch.
Okay, so Data, I'm going to move right on from that brutal comment, Carrie. Data manages to hack into the Borg via Picard. And we learn that that the Borg manage a link with all Borg via subspace frequencies.
That's not a deficit that can be exploited at all.
No.
Ever.
Yeah.
It's just fine.
But as Borg adapt, Picard fights the Borg and reaches out to Data as himself. And just a lovely little scene of Data, trying to hack her voice into Picard's brain. And then
it's before we even knew what to call him. Mm-hmm. Hackers.
And we're getting some temporal lobe activity, and everyone's like, oh my god, what is that? What does that mean? And Deanna, it's him. Hey, we know our Picard is still
like, I have a wine in this episode.
And Picard helps Data to fight the Borg anti-hack programs and gets them to power down just before they reach Earth or destroy the Enterprise. Picard helps Data to plant a command in the Borg to suggest that it was time to regenerate. The Borg weapons and navigation subcommand systems were highly protected and could not be penetrated, but the regenerative subcommand system was relatively a low-level system and not as well guarded and hence hackable. The Borg all go to sleep.
Nappy time for Borgs.
Which, watching the episode, you're like, yes, this rules. Reading this out loud to you now seems really silly. Mm-hmm. Because all Picard does is just say, sleep. And
okay, but think about it for any other... Okay, so I'm going to go IT guy here. That is the classic, what are your vulnerabilities? Oh, we've got this really low-level system that nobody would ever bother. Mm. We're not going to worry about it. Oh, crap. So, I mean, it's perfectly reasonable. It, like, in modern society, this is a career-limiting move to leave that kind of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. It's like long career-threatening move.
I wonder if that's what happened to me back in October, because I went to sleep for a good long time.
You had a low-level system.
That's true.
And somebody was like, nap time for lazy.
So this was like a giant nerve pinch. It just nerve pinched the entire Borg, you know?
Ta-da. So, the Borg all go to sleep, and due to the malfunction, the Borg ship explodes, and Earth, yeah, mother effers. Picard is back. Shelby leaves the Enterprise. She will be missed. I will miss her. And then Riker goes back to being first officer. Although they are, everybody acknowledges, like, Riker, after this, you could have any ship you wanted. Also, most butt clenchiest moment of this episode is Riker's like, Wesley or Ensign Crusher set a collision course for the Borg ship, and Wesley looks like, are you serious?
That's the Riker maneuver.
Yeah, Riker's ram him.
Like, yeah, you heard me.
And ram him.
And then right as Riker starts to say engage, Data comes on over the comm and says, "Hold on a minute, you guys. I was on the edge of my fucking seat." know everything was going to be fine. Ooh, but still, I was on alert.
So I have a theory that cannot be unproven at all. It's in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yes.
There's a weasel, and when he's on the wagon, he's going, "I'm going to ram him." Entire inspiration of Will Riker.
You think?
even though that movie came out 3 years after Next Gen started, I'm still convinced that, you know, right around that time.
Character could be based off of Will Riker.
Well, he hadn't started ramming ships until Roger Rabbit. And then all of a sudden, they're like...
Riker was capable of ship ramming, though.
And why is his nickname Crash?
to go back even further, though, Lee, in the movie Popeye, as you recall, Poop Deck Pappy. That was his answer. I'm going to ram him.
Got to ram him.
So maybe
it's also my answer when I have road rage, so I'm not allowed to drive anymore.
So maybe they got the inspiration from Poop Deck Pappy.
You could hope.
Well, some trivia for this episode. Prior to filming, LeVar Burton had surgery, and his scenes were carefully filmed after majority of production was concluded. This is why he only appears in close-ups and not in the shots with any of the other main characters. Most of Geordi's lines were given to, what's his name? O'Brien.
Chief O'Brien. Which is going to be my thing. It's like, so why is O'Brien in the lab with Data and Doctor and Beverly? Just like, that seems like a chief engineer job.
Kayaking again?
Well, he will be an engineer.
And
someday.
I did not know this. The Lakota storyline was influenced by the uncertainty of whether Patrick Stewart would renew his contract for another season. Stewart could have decided to leave the show at this point, in which case Jean-Luc Picard would have been killed off in this chapter, and the series would have continued with William Riker as the captain.
As the captain. Oh.
But then the greatest injustice. I mean, the guy saves the Federation, right? His command... He did something that a admiral with 40 ships couldn't do. They beat the Borg, and they're like, "Well, if you want to be a commander again, that's fine."
Exactly.
Shelby goes from lieutenant commander to full commander in one episode.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't go yoink, here's your lieutenant commander pips back.
I kind of feel like they know. I kind of feel like Starfleet knows Riker's not going anywhere. If he wants to stay as first officer for a while, just let him do whatever. Yes, Commander Neil.
So it turns out they actually wrote this because apparently Starfleet was like, Picard's compromised. There's no way we're putting him back in the chair.
Which is what I would have done.
And like the captain, admiral, judge, advocate that Picard knew, Philippa, whatever her name was, mm-hmm. and three other admirals pulled Riker aside for a secret meeting and were like, so you're a captain now. This is your ship. And Riker was like, Picard's back. And they're like, we're not putting him in the chair. He is compromised. We're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Riker said, well, that's great. I resign and my entire bridge crew will resign and you will have a flagship with no crew. And they're like, it's apocrypha. Look in the, there's an apocrypha about it where they wrote this out where they determined, they were like, nobody's going to understand how Riker went from captain back to commander and was okay with it and why they put Picard back in the chair.
Yeah, because we learned in Discovery, you can actually have two captains on a ship.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my first question at the end of this episode is how is Starfleet security letting him back on the bridge?
Answer is basically Riker said, there, you put him back in the chair. I will stay on the Enterprise and watch him. And if anything goes wrong, I will be there.
Okay.
And so that was their compromise.
And then he showed him the clip from season one and he says, I have head melting experience. I can do it.
But that was their compromise for putting him back in command.
Okay.
That's mind blowing. That's real good stuff. Mm-hmm. That's good Star Trek. That's some good Star Trek stuff. And then, you know, Picard, he, you know, at the end, he seems to be fine. Got his pieces all off. And then he stares out a window. And I am like, dude, you got to get to therapy.
You're
like,
broken.
So fast, man.
There's only one thing that's going to fix this, Jean-Luc Picard. And that's a couple days at Chateau Picard.
Well, and here's the thing is that this will stay with the character.
Yes.
Forever.
For the rest of his career. I mean, it's forever. It was that traumatic. And it will come up again, you know.
Yeah.
Borg TSD.
Yeah.
So really quick before we leave this episode, we did a Star Trek panel 4 or 5 years ago at FanX, and we were talking about favorite captains and first officers.
Mm-hmm.
And, Sisko and Kira till I die. However, I think that one of the best first officer and captain combinations is actually Riker and Shelby. Because Riker did something completely unexpected, and it's actually, to be honest, it's guided a lot of my management style, is I don't like yes men or yes women. So I want somebody who's going to challenge me, not directly challenge, like, you don't deserve the job, but somebody who's like, we have a different way of trying this. Give this an option, at least a chance, like Shelby did. So I think that they are one of the most underrated pairs in Starfleet.
Well, and I like that too, because Riker even tells her, like, you keep me on my toes, and I like that.
Yeah.
And that's killer. Like, because I agree, like, surrounding yourself with yes men is, mm-hmm. you're not going to really accomplish anything. You got to have somebody who has differing views than you to provide you with other areas of, like, you know, to cover your blind spots, essentially.
But it's not just different views. It's conviction in those views as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, does Shelby go right from here to second in command of the Excalibur with Captain Calhoun?
Didn't she go to lead off the Borg?
That's right.
She's in charge of
to Borg defense.
And we know who she ends up working with on Borg defense, and we know a little ship that ends up being a byproduct of that. But can't tell you because that's a ship. Spoiler. Yeah. It's just the best ship. It's okay.
You know,
ever.
Just the best one in Star Trek. That's all.
My big question is, was Wolf 359 named after by astronomy nerds who are obsessed with the actual constellation of Wolf 359? Or is it named after the second season episode of The Outer Limits called Wolf 359? Because nerds like to be nerds.
I can tell you.
Second. Thank you.
I'm going to go with Outer Limits.
Probably. Nerds.
I can tell you it is
that's the sound that she hears when she's searching the internet. That's it. We're in her head right now.
Oh no, the internet
it's La Cucaracha.
That's the internet's disappeared.
It's okay. We don't need it.
Look it up on your own time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's your homework. Report back for the spaceship show.
When you subscribe down below, also add the comment. Okay.
Yeah.
Get at us in the comments with your corrections. Let's move on to the unofficial third episode in this trilogy. Family. After defeating the Borg, the crew of the Enterprise experiences shore leave in various ways. Captain Picard's return to his family's vineyard in France has some extraordinary repercussions. I didn't think I was going to like this episode, and I ended up really liking this episode.
Oh, wow.
But not for Picard's story.
Ah.
Okay. We'll get to it. So, with the Enterprise and space dock undergoing repairs following its encounter with the Borg, several members of the crew have the opportunity for shore leave. Captain Picard returns to his home village in La Barre, France, to visit his older brother Robert and sister Marie and and nephew René. Marie invites Picard into their home, while Robert is very cold towards Picard. Picard can see that nothing has changed in his village or the house where he grew up, and René, his nephew, wants to be a starship captain when he grows up. Picard's initial interaction with this kid is so funny, because we all know Picard's not great with kids, and so this weird kid with a bowl cut is talking to him, and he's like, "You don't seem so what's the word?" And Picard's
dynamic?
Like, "Arrogant." And he's like, "Yes, you do not seem like an arrogant son of a..." And Picard's like, "Okay, just stop talking." Picard hasn't been home in 20 years, and he has always had a difficult relationship with his brother, who considered him to be a know-it-all. In fact, Robert calls Picard an arrogant person, son of a bitch, while the captain viewed his brother as a bully. Robert is a grape farmer, and Robert is conservative and doesn't like change and hates technology, while Picard is an adventurer who can't sit still. I'm so fascinated by birth order theory, and this just makes a ton of sense, because Robert is the older brother who has been essentially responsible for helping with upkeep of the vineyard and the grapes, whereas Picard, I think, had... And this is all just me conjecturing. Picard had more leeway to be adventurous and to, you know, explore more, whereas Robert had to start working from a very young age. Picard says values can be retained while technology can enhance and make life more convenient for humans. They talk about this while discussing bringing a replicator into the home, because they don't have a replicator at the home. Mm-hmm. And Robert says life is already too convenient. And Robert doesn't want Picard to encourage René to choose a life of space and technology. Also, the mayor of the village wants to hold a parade in Picard's honor and give him the keys to the city. But of course, Picard, ever humble, declines. Picard meets with his old friend, Luis, who is a supervisor on a project aiming to raise the ocean floor and create a new continent on Earth, Project Atlantis, which is so fascinating. I want to know more about this. Mm-hmm. Louis mentions that the project is looking for a new director and wants Picard to apply. And before Picard can think about it, Louis has already set up his meeting with the Board of Governors. And there's a moment where Picard has a conversation with Marie, his sister-in-law. I really like the conversations that Picard has with Marie, because they're very substantive, right? Mm-hmm. And he's talking about how Louis had offered him this position, and Picard was like, "And you know what? I found myself thinking about it, and me at home on my couch going, my man, what a serious life shift. You must have really been through it with the Borg."
He went through the shit, baby.
That day, Robert taunts Picard about seeking adulation all his life. Picard protests and tries to walk away, but Robert continues to needle and insult Picard and his achievements. Robert says that Picard came back as he wanted Robert to take care of him again, and Picard calls him a bully, and they start to fist fight. And they have a little fight, romp around in the mud, but then laughter turns to tears as Picard starts to cry that...
What a baby.
The Borg took away everything he had and used it to kill his colleagues and friends, and he couldn't do anything about it, and he wasn't strong enough. And again, cut to me on my couch, weeping. Robert advises Picard not to hide from it. He advises him not to hide from it by accepting the assignment from Louis. Picard cancels his meeting with Louis and decides to go back to the Enterprise. And Renee reminds us he wants to be a starship captain mm-hmm. one day.
But before, he still hands Louis his ideas, though, about yeah. Project Atlantis. Yeah. He goes, I came up with a few things, and I noticed a couple of things in your stuff. And you know, he still hands him
over. Travis.
And Louis's like, I need you, man. Nobody knows what they're doing.
You can have this like, for free.
What's this thing about sacrificing a psychic child to the planet every year? And he's like, oh, no, wrong series.
But, yeah, just that scene with them in the vineyard. And just Patrick Stewart's doing some good acting here, you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Just... some A-plus stuff. I can't get over it. It gives me chills, honestly, thinking about it. Just how he's like, ha ha ha, mm-hmm. oh my god, my life is jabbles.
But this was not the story that interested you.
No, it was now,
tell
not.
Us, what story Ronald D. Moore wrote that interested you?
Meanwhile, Lieutenant Worf welcomes his adoptive parents, CPO Sergei and Helena Rozenko, aboard the Enterprise. Worf is still feeling the sting of his dishonor from the Klingon homeworld, and he and his parents know that he is hurting. Worf does not want to include them in his problem, and this hurts them more than the problem itself. And this is the story that I really, really, really loved the most, was Worf being so hesitant to welcome his parents on board the Enterprise. And the thing about... We've never met Worf's parents before, his adoptive parents before, so we don't know what to expect. And the way he's talking about them, like, oh my god, we got another Lwaxana on our hands, because they are so excited to see where their son works, right? Like, they are so mm-hmm. excited to be on the Enterprise. And the dad, Sergei, even says he has copies of all the specs of the ship. Like, he has an interest in his son's work. And Worf is like, get them off the ship as quickly as possible, because I don't want them here. Because he's also, he feels embarrassed by how excited they are to see where their son works. But also, he is still feeling so, I don't want to use the word embarrassed, but like disheartened and hurt because of where he is currently within Klingon culture and society, right? He's been totally dishonored. He's gone through a huge life change here. And he doesn't want his parents to be a part of that. And like this says, like, they want to help their son. And Worf is not accepting their love. And I, again, on my couch, Worf, just accept your parents' love, please. he drops them off at the bar. And Guinan swoops in with Guinan knowledge, who tells them that in his heart, Worf is still a boy. And they should approach him as such. And so Sergei and Helena continue to spend time with Worf, and eventually he admits that he is glad that they came to meet him. they meet Picard on their way back and are very happy that Worf is with his family on the ship. there's also another C-story. A C-plot happening here, where Beverly, because they're at Earth, so there's a lot of stuff that they can just do here on mm-hmm. Earth. And in her storage unit or whatever, she has a box of Jack's stuff, her deceased husband, Wesley's father. And within that box of stuff is a recording that Jack made for Wesley. And I, of course, am like, oh my god, I am not prepared for this also, because we're gonna get a lovely message from Wesley's father, and Wesley's gonna have an emotional moment himself. So she had kept this recording in storage and now has a chance to retrieve and give it to Wesley. But Beverly kind of goes back and forth about whether or not she should give it to Wesley. And Deanna says that Wesley still has a lot of questions about his father, and this holographic recording might help. And so she encourages Beverly to share it with Wesley. Wesley plays it on the holodeck. I'm in tears. Episode ends. Great, fantastic. Great episode. I loved every second of it. I thought it was
Thanks, great. Ronald Moore.
Thank you, Ronald Moore.
Bye, Ronald Moore.
I'm getting to the point now, too, where I know enough about, like, directors and writers for the show, where I was looking at, who wrote, Best of Both Worlds, Part 1 and 2, and then I saw Family was written by Ronald D. Moore, and I was like, oh, baby, okay, we're in for a good one, aren't we? And
yep.
Did not disappoint.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a shame he didn't write the majority of DS9 or anything.
Did he? God. don't, you guys? David Birkin, who plays Captain Picard's nephew, Rene, would later go on to play a younger version of Captain Picard himself. This makes line, "Someday I'll be leaving for my starship too," into a coincidental foreshadowing.
Oh, wow.
And then this piece of trivia, which means, of course, this episode was phenomenal. Gene Roddenberry was apparently not happy at the commissioning of this episode, as he thought it was too much like an episode of a soap opera and lacked any science fiction element. However, showrunner Michael Piller received the backing of producer Rick Berman to go ahead and film it because he liked the way it would humanize Picard and give him some backstory after his traumatizing experience of being turned into a Borg before being rescued. Roddenberry protested to Paramount, who at this stage was already losing patience with him and his constant interference in the show's production.
Get out of here, Gene. Go.
He had already been banned from sets of the film franchise some years earlier after constantly complaining to the studio. After his complaints about this episode, the Paramount board decided to force the already ill Roddenberry to take a back seat and take no further part in the production process, and he died just over a year after this episode's broadcast. I love the pieces of trivia that are like, Gene Roddenberry hates it. And that's why, and it's consistently one of the best things about Star Trek. It's if Gene Roddenberry hates it, that means it's pretty good.
I've said that about Star Trek. I've said it about Star Wars. When their creators go away, you get better stuff. You know?
And something else about Picard here, we learn, you know, it's nice seeing him from the point of view of people who knew him before he went off to space. And
yeah,
I have opinions about him, but it reminded me of the way that he keeps coming back to the Enterprise and keeps, you know, it is his life is like the song. Brandy.
You're a fine girl.
What a fine wife you would be.
But my life, my love for my lady is the Enterprise.
La mer.
But the parallels there in getting to see how his brother calls him out for, you just come home so I can fix you. But he knows that he's not going to stay. It's like, oh, that's kind of cool.
It's something that Gene was never really familiar with, and that is, character development. It's a strange thing to him.
We need a new villain of the week.
He also struggled because Ronald Moore desperately wanted, and Piller even wanted, Star Trek to not be an episode of the week thing. They wanted it to be a continuous story, which they did manage to pull off by the third season of DS9. But this was their first time where three episodes in a row were telling a continuation of the previous storyline.
This is them dipping their toes into serialization, right? Because at the end of Best of Both Worlds Part 2, Picard's looking out on Earth, contemplating going back home, and then he follows through with that in the next episode. Highly unusual for Star Trek so far. Just loved
good stuff.
Have a question, this his family home that he returns to, is this the same place he goes to in Picard?
Yes.
Cool. Just checking. Moving on to Brothers. After an accident aboard the Enterprise leaves one of its children in grave danger, Data commandeers the Enterprise, driven to take the ship to an unknown origin where an interesting figure awaits. Guys, I'm going to embarrass myself here in a little bit, but I'll get to it. So the Enterprise is en route to a medical facility to obtain urgent treatment for a child who's been injured. Two brothers, Willie and Jake Potts, were playing laser tag in the arcade. First time hearing that the Enterprise has an arcade.
They have Frogger. It's one of the last places in the universe that you could play Frogger.
They had Crazy Climber, but Worf got so mad he smashed it.
Jake made Willie believe that Willie had shot him with a real laser gun. Willie got very upset and intentionally ate the fruit of a cove palm, which is extremely infectious. I don't exactly understand the scenario here. Willie requires specific medical attention that they cannot treat on the Enterprise. But Data inexplicably Data gone. Here is just Android, hijacks the Enterprise, increases the warp speed to 9.3, sets a course to an unknown destination, and just sets every failsafe known to man in place where no one can stop him.
And he's the guy to do it. You know, he knows that ship back and forth, man.
There's a moment where we think our main crew have finally regained control of the bridge,
yeah.
but Data has set in place a security code. And as when he initially starts listing off that code, I was like, okay, try to memorize this. And it's like 8,000 numbers long. And I'm like, there's no way these guys are going to get this code.
No, they're not.
Two-factor authentication.
These puny humans are not going to be able to remember that stuff.
Data's also, he's imitating Picard's voice, you know, in order to, which this is the future technology. There's got to be a better way to detect AI voice and deep fake voice, right?
You would think the nine different pictures pop up and say, select everything with a cat on it. And Data's like, I give up. Like,
oh my God. The box comes up that says, check if you are not a robot. And he's like, I can't do it.
So I can't tell which one's a crosswalk.
Now as
a motorcycle.
As this is all going down, again, my Starfleet security brain goes off. And if I'm Starfleet security, he's out.
Yep.
He's out because he
can
be compromised. You know?
Not the first or last time he does this.
And remember what I said last Space Show about how interesting now that we have an android that's capable of going rogue and telling lies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they drop out of warp. They've arrived at whatever planet. Data transports himself to this planet, bypassing all the security that Picard and Riker can throw at him, and finds his creator, Dr. Noonien Soong, alive and well. And here's where I'm going to embarrass myself, you guys.
You won't be embarrassed.
As I'm watching this episode, my husband's watching it with me, and he goes, who's the regular aged man that they have in all this old age makeup? And I go, I don't know. Don't even look into it. I'm putting together notes for this episode, and I see, oh, that's Brent Spiner.
To be completely fair, he was a last-minute casting decision because they couldn't find anybody to play the character.
Yeah, that's when I was putting together trivia, Brent Spiner suggested that he play the role of Dr. Soong when the producers were having difficulties casting the role, and I go, what? Are you saying?
Well, because it makes sense. He would create Data and Laura in his own image, you know?
Yeah.
Personally, I would have cast Wallace Shawn, but I'd cast Wallace Shawn.
Inconceivable.
Yeah.
But it was so funny because the entire time Dr. Noonien Soong is on screen, I'm like, this guy is so annoying. I hate every little character choice he is making.
I don't know, my brain with the Wallace Shawn thing, that's all I'm seeing right now.
So Data chip.
Data, my boy, you might be wondering why I brought you here. This is an emotion chip.
All right, so Willie, the brother, he's still sick and risks the entire ship with infection just from eating this one fruit. Why do they have this fruit on the Enterprise?
Why do they have an android that can take everything over? There's so many, why do they? Yeah. Why can't a woman be more like a man?
All right. So Data has no recollection of being brought here to this planet. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Soong touches 3 points on Data to kind of reset him, after which Data is a bit like himself. The doctor has activated a homing device in Data as a way of bringing him home. Meanwhile, Picard is able to get back on the bridge, but Data has locked all the commands with his personal override codes and 8 billion-digit password. And so the ship cannot move without Data. And so this kid is doomed, honestly. But what are you going to do?
What do we care? We really, none of us care, really.
Eat the crappy plant. You deserve to die.
Yeah, you're just a mechanism in this story. That's all you are, you know, so we didn't care.
The good doctor has also disabled his communicator, so Data cannot get in touch with the Enterprise, or the Enterprise cannot get in touch with Data. Data is surprised that Dr. Soong survived the colony blast, which is supposed to have killed him. The doctor says he's always had an escape plan, and Data tells Dr. Soong that he joined Starfleet since it was Starfleet officers who saved him.
Never question me about escape plans when death's on the line!
Dr. Soong engages Data in conversation and realizes that Data has learned a lot more about the human psyche. He understands why humans yearn for the past while procreating to propel their lineage into the future. I thought this was a really interesting conversation that they have about, you know, why do mortal humans cling so fervently to the past? I thought, really great conversation. But then, twist in the soap opera-like twist, Data's twin brother, Lore, arrives.
Oh, I just thought it was a skinny, pale Packlet.
Spoiler alert, did you know Lore, also played by Brent Spiner?
Ah!
What?
What?
The Dutch, I thought it was Frakes.
No idea that Lore had been reactivated in the homing signal, intended only for Data, obviously called Lore home as well. Data is not happy as Lore has collaborated with the crystal entity and killed all inhabitants of the colony to gain favor from the entity. Meanwhile, Willy has 36 hours.
Stupid
guess
kid.
What? I like Lore. I think Lore is a cool character, and I want more of him. I
want to know.
Data.
I want a flashback scene of him getting that badass Packlet uniform.
Because he talks like anybody should when they're talking about the Packlet. Such annoyance in his voice. He's like,
yep.
I was dealing with the Packlet. And you can just tell he's so aggravated.
You know, there's at least one less Packlet and he's wearing his uniform.
I was like, Lore, I like your fit. That's a good looking fit.
And you know, the Packlets were like, wow, he was smart. He made us go.
Maybe I like being naked now. I don't know.
Meanwhile, my brother's sitting in a chair.
Again, Data, sit in the chair. That should be another shirt. Add that to our collection. Riker, no, and then Data, sit in the chair.
Put on your clothes and sit in the chair.
So the reason that the doctor called Data home was to provide him with a new chip to give him emotions. Lore, of course, has his own devious plans, impersonates Data, and soon inserts the emotion chip in Lore instead of Data. Lore injures Dr. Soong and escapes. Meanwhile, Picard sends an away party of Riker, Geordi, and Worf to locate Data, as they can't move the ship without him, because don't forget, Willy's dying. Riker finds Data, activates him, and Dr. Soong dies. And there's a very nice, touching moment between Dr. Soong and Data. Again, Brett Spiner doing both parts, don't forget.
Don't forget.
Data, my boy!
And they have just like this really nice moment of Dr. Soong, Data's like, hey, we can get you to the ship, you'll be fine. And Dr. Soong is like, honestly, I'm good. Don't you worry about me. And Data's like, you know, I cannot grieve for you. And he's like, yeah, I know. And watch this scene. I really like the writing here. I thought it was very good. Dr. Soong tells Data how to remove his memory block. Data returns to the Enterprise, activates all control. Willy's fine. End of story. But now Lore is just out there with an emotions chip now. What does that mean?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all.
Nothing.
Absolutely.
Forget
nothing.
That happened.
You know what that means? That means there's one more American Dad fan in the universe.
Yes.
Because he's got emotions. He can laugh. He can enjoy.
Lore will be back. And what kid wouldn't want to play with a Dr. Noonien Singh action figure?
Well, there you go.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Kids.
It's too bad that one didn't come out sooner, because it could have come with a Pog.
It did.
Did you have that one?
Well, that is a Pog.
Yeah, that is a Pog right there.
We had all of them.
Had all of them. I sold them all.
Do you remember Dr. Noonien Singh? He's back in Pog form.
I wanted commercials. They did Playmates commercials for the early series, but I wanted him later, like some kid being like, oh, hey, here we are on the Star Trek Enterprise, and I'm Dr. Song. Hey.
One thing, I mean, we've got to give...
Do you think Roddenberry's Vietnam War vet friend, like, ever figured out, like, because he named these characters to catch the attention of his friend from the war, Noonien Singh, or I can't remember whatever. But do you think that ever happened? Do you think he was like, oh my god, I do remember Gene Roddenberry, and that guy was an asshole. I hope he never finds me.
Wow.
I would hope that was it.
No, I was going to say, we've seen Brent Spiner do great back-to-back impressions with Lore and Data, but he goes full Christopher Reeve here in three roles in the same episode.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
and
like
keeps them all unique.
I think I spent too much time during this episode being mad. that there are old actors, there's old people who want to be actors and you can't find any. And so we have this, so we just have this air quotes random guy in old age makeup that never ever looks good on Star Trek. But I got it. I felt like such a fool. You guys, when I found out this morning that was Brent Spiner.
You're fine.
Also, the dinosaur skeleton head seen in Dr. Soon's laboratory was rented from the Museum of Natural History. Mm. Isn't that fun? No. Suddenly human. On a rescue mission to an alien shipwrecked training mission, they discover one of its trainees to be a human.
Oh, I can't wait for you to read this recap because I went sleepy time.
Honestly, I did as well. I missed the part. I missed the part where Picard got stabbed.
Well, let's
because
talk about
I was
it.
So bored with this episode.
Me too.
Oh my gosh!
Because it was another one of them episodes, and I hated it when they did it on TOS, and I'm gonna hate it when they do it now. A group of children being annoying, awesome. Love it when they do that. So. The Enterprise rescues a small group of Talarian adolescents, all wearing uniforms. It turns out that they're all humans. We don't even have, we literally don't even have to do the full recap. Because
we don't.
Here's the thing. Yep. This kid, so the main annoying kid, Jono, he's human and his parents were in Starfleet. His grandmother is still in Starfleet and an admiral. And so as a child, his family was killed. He was taken in by the Talarians, and he has since grown up in Talarian culture. Super fascinating. Would love to study this kid, right? And I'm surprised. I'm also surprised why Picard is also like, oh, I don't. Oh, no, thank you. Because Deanna says, hey, he needs a male mentor. This child is sexist. We don't even have to go into that. This child is just sexist. Mm-hmm. And Picard, what a wonderful opportunity for you to study a human child who has been raised in another culture and wants to return to that culture instead of being taken away and forced back into human culture and Starfleet. But instead, Picard's like, ooh, kids? Ah.
But why try to shuffle him off on Picard when you got Reg Barkley right there?
That's right.
Ooh.
I will be your father figure.
Put your little hand in mine.
Wow.
There's no way Jonah would respect Barclay. Are you kidding me?
That's true.
Come on.
That's true. That's true.
And really, the only reason he respects Picard is because he's the captain. Yeah. He's been raised to respect that level of authority.
Mm-hmm.
I would have airlocked him.
We know.
They get in touch with the Talarian captain who claims Jono as his son. And so there's a whole thing about how, like, hey, you better return my son to me. And they're like, well, he's human, so we can't do that. But then as Picard spends more time with Jono playing futuristic pickleball, Jono remembers his human history and is now conflicted because he's like, well, dang. Because they also introduce him to his grandmother, who is an admiral in Starfleet. And he's like, oh, a woman? And she ranks higher than you, Picard? Crisis of faith here. And because he has this like whole crisis of faith where he's like, well, I don't want to leave my life as I know it, my family that I have grown up with on the Solarian society, just to go back to humans. So I guess I'll just kill Picard, which will mean death for me. So it's death by cop, essentially, is what he's trying to do, right? And Picard's like, ugh, listen, what you did was bad. But
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Exactly. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Like, I get it. And they let him go back to be with the Talarians, and end of story. Like, that's the story, you know? I do like that he was an annoying teenager. Like, he had his loud Talarian music and wanted to eat his weird Talarian food. The dagger that Jono stabs Picard with is the one that Picard received it as Worf's Chadich in the Sins of the Father episode. Make of that what
you
will.
I just now realized missed opportunity here. Because Worf has already done this.
Ah.
With Jeremy Astor.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Worf, and we just saw Worf's parents two episodes back. So now we could see Worf would understand being from one culture, raised in another culture.
Yeah, it's almost like whoever wrote this episode didn't really understand Star Trek.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I don't know. I fell asleep. I don't know. I mean, I lasted 20 minutes.
So as did I. Yeah.
This was written by Ralph Phillips. Telephoned by Ralph John Phillips. Wellesley and Jerry Taylor. I don't know.
Yeah. So.
Ralph Phillips was that little boy in the Looney Tunes cartoons with the vivid imagination. It's true. Look it up. Mm.
Right. So overall, interesting concept of an episode.
Yeah.
But we were so bored by it. I was also super bored by this next one, Remember Me. Dr. Crusher's fear of losing loved
also
ones becomes
great
real
premise.
Worries create an alternate reality. Great premise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yawn fest for me. And I don't know, maybe it's because I was already just so sleepy. But I'm not even going to read the recap for this one, because essentially Wesley, once again with his little spearmints, messes everything up. And so Dr. Crusher, she's welcoming a mentor of hers onto the Enterprise, Dr. Dalen Quayce. And he's old and has some cool things to say. I really like all of his lines. Very limited time, but I liked them. Mm-hmm. And Geordi and Wesley are doing some kind of experiment, and there's a big flash of light, and suddenly people are disappearing from the Enterprise, and Beverly is the only sane one on the ship. And at first, this episode does a thing that I love that Star Trek does, where something's amiss, I can't explain it,
mm-hmm.
but we believe you anyway, right? Yeah. Like, something is wrong, that's okay, we're gonna try our best to investigate it. We're not going to automatically assume that you're crazy, especially it's so nice to see a woman being like, hey, something wrong. And then all the men in charge being like, okay, we believe you.
Mm-hmm.
What a concept.
Are you sure it's not hormones?
Are you sure you're not on your period?
Yeah. Are you sure you're not on that icky thing we don't like to think about?
But then more and more people keep disappearing from the Enterprise. Oh, so her mentor disappears, right? And there's zero record of him. And going on, more and more people disappear, and there's no record of these people. And everybody's fine with it. And so, Picard is like, yeah, there's only, five people working on the ship. What do you mean there's always more people? And Beverly's like, what are you talking about? That's insane. Nobody seems to think this is fine.
As I was watching this, two things. First of all, I enjoyed seeing Beverly trying to solve a problem on her own.
That was fun.
That was cool. Secondly, as I was watching this, I was thinking to myself, is this what Alzheimer's is like?
I was like, oh my God, this is like...
Because everybody around you is just saying, no, that's not what's happening, but
wow,
okay.
I did have that thought watching this episode. Yeah. Like, oh my God, this is like the Sarek episode all over again, just a little bit more on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, everybody disappears and she's the only one on the ship. She's heading to Tau Alpha C, and then the Enterprise is like, that place doesn't exist either. And she's like, okay, what the ass? And there's like a vortex, and it turns out on the other side of the vortex, everybody's there. It is fine. And it turns out Beverly herself is trapped in this little bubble. So she's...
What?
She pieces together, oh my God, I'm in the bubble. I gotta get out of the bubble. A friendly reappearance from our friend, the Traveler.
Oh,
yay.
Hi.
They kept mentioning
everyone.
Him throughout the episode. Hey.
I have an action figure, you know.
they kept mentioning him throughout the episode. And I was like, I just kept thinking, oh, it's just some metaphorical traveler. But then he shows up and I'm like, oh, this guy.
That
we
guy.
Know this guy.
Yes. It's old Nosebrow Ridge guy.
It's old Nosebrow. So he helps and Beverly gets back and... Hooray!
Ta-da.
Will it make you feel any better to know that they redo this episode kind of on Deep Space Nine and do it much better?
Oh, do they?
Yeah, it's just a better show.
Gates McFadden did all of her stunts for the vortex effect sequences. Shortly after performing the stunt where she is thrown from Data's ops console chair, Gates McFadden learned she was pregnant. So she wasn't on her period.
Well played. Yeah.
Does this mean I'm going to have a little brother or sister, Mom?
And I will name him Jack.
And can I experiment on him too?
Yes. Oh my God. That's my Gates McFadden impersonation.
That's very good.
It's infallible.
Good. Oh my yeah. God. It's like she's in the room with us.
I used to call for takeout in that voice, and people always be like, whoa,
we'll
charge you to your account, Miss McFadden.
And you're like, excellent.
Excellent.
But yeah, that's Star Trek. That's Star Trek this week. What do we think? Best episodes ever?
Mm? a few of them.
Yeah.
Couple of them are pretty good.
Yeah.
I always think about we first heard the term bottle show in the late 80s when we were obsessively researching the original series, and they would talk about how when they had an expensive effects heavy show, they would do bottle shows, and how Next Gen was a victim of that as well. And I feel like after Best of Both Worlds and then Family, they were like, yeah, we need some bottle shows. We need some shows where, you know, the most we have to do. You think about what's the ultimate bottle show is an episode by the end of the episode, it's just Beverly.
Yeah.
On the set, right?
And it's just the set. Yeah.
And you'll see it later when the episode I like to call, Why is Picard trapped in an elevator with annoying children?
Oh, God, again?
Yeah.
I forgot about that one.
I feel so bad.
Let me remind you. Frère Jacques.
No.
Don't spoil anything for me, Lee.
Oh, no, I'm trying to save you.
I feel so bad for the episodes that feature stories involving kids and parents and parenting, because I immediately poo-poo them because I have zero interest in that myself. And I feel like I don't really give it a fair shot. So I do try, but I just want to apologize in advance for having zero interest in them going in, you know?
And it's wild because I think DS9's the last with kids. Is Enterprise, no, Enterprise is and Voyager.
Voyager. Naomi Wildman.
There's a kid on Voyager?
Later seasons.
Oh, right. See, I fell asleep after episode 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Prodigy's all kids.
Yeah, Prodigy's just kids.
And Prodigy was, I found every character on Prodigy annoying until like episode 6. And then all of a sudden I was like, yes! So.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow.
Really got into Prodigy.
I actually like those kids, yeah.
Yeah.
Next week we will talk about... Oh, I forgot even to mention... This is a dumb joke, and it's really only for me. The end of Remember Me ends with Robert Pattinson staring out the window of a World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001. That joke is just for me.
Just for you.
There's a movie called Remember Me starring Robert Pattinson. It's a romance movie, and it takes the wildest leap out of nowhere right at the very end, where Robert Pattinson's accepting a job. I think he's accepting a job, but he's in the World Trade Tower on September 11th, 2001.
Oh.
Movie ends, and it's up to you to piece together what happens.
Wow. Okay.
I'm upset because I just literally, as you were talking, found a Darmok based meme that somehow manages to quote Dune while still being Darmok, and we can't talk about it until next season.
Oh,
yes, I saw that earlier. Okay.
Yeah. So Darmok is coming in season 5, Rebecca, and it's going to be just like yesterday's Enterprise, and then I'm not going to shut up about it.
Yeah.
Also, I sent this tweet that I saw to our little Star Trek chat where today is April 4th when we are recording, and somebody said, don't forget to leave out tequila and classic rock music for Zefram Cochrane tonight, because April 5th, 2063, he invents the warp drive engine.
Yes.
And I was like, I bet this is funny. And Robert was like, it is.
It is.
You'll see.
It is. Because not only does he like tequila, he likes classic rock.
Yep. So next week, we're going to talk about these episodes, Legacy Reunion, which is directed by Jonathan Frakes, Future Imperfect, Final Mission, and The Loss. Until then, we're going to keep going where no man has gone before, but a lot of men have gone before. Thanks, everybody.